Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
Concentrate. Hold his head. Bridget.
On movie reels of on horror movie B reels, I should say, brains and saws have long been a match made in heaven, or more accurately, in hell. That particularly lovely scene is from the 1969 film Frankenstein Must Be Destroyed. But there's nothing scary about the saws and brains in Dr. Jeff Lichtman's office. Unless, of course, you're a lab mouse. Dr. Lichtman is a professor of molecular and cellular biology at Harvard, and he and his research team are creating a neuron-by-neuron map of a mouse brain. The project involves shaving off incredibly thin brain slices, each just nanometers wide, which is way, way thinner than a human hair. Lichtman then scans the slices with an electron microscope and then reconstructs them in a three-dimensional map. It's all part of the emerging field of connectomics. Dr. Jeff Lichtman joins us now. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, Meghna. Pleasure to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. So we'll get to how one actually, or how you're actually going about creating this map in a second. It's called a connectome, if I understand correctly. But how is that different from, you know, MRIs and PET scans we already have of the human brain or brains in general?
Yeah, sure. There's a wide number of tools that scientists and clinicians use to image brains, especially the non-invasive tools that are used in human imaging, like MRI. These tools are great at seeing blood flow in the brain and structures at a relatively fine resolution, but relative to the actual structure of the brain, still quite coarse. So, for example, an MRI might have a resolution of about a cubic millimeter. Most people, I think, have a sense of how big that is. But in our data sets, that would be larger than anything we've ever reconstructed. Not even one cubic millimeter yet.
Okay. So if I understand correctly, each little spot that you're looking at is even millions of times smaller than that.
That's correct. Just nanometers rather than millimeters.
Okay. And the images out of a cubic millimeter take about some 1,000 terabytes?
That is right. And I think people are just beginning to get used to the idea of a terabyte being 1,000 gigabytes.
Yeah.
So 1,000 terabytes is a scary large number. It's actually called a petabyte for those who are starting to think in terms like this.
Okay. So we've got images on our website at wbur.org/Boston that just show how deep and information dense the images that you're capturing are. So you should, listeners, definitely go check it out. And I kind of want to describe this in a sense of scale. So if you take a millimeter section of a mouse brain, as you're doing, and blow up that image on a computer screen, and then you take a tiny speck of that millimeter and create these colorful, complex 3D neural images that look almost like a slice of some psychedelic marble cake. So it's very...
You got it about right.
It makes your research sound very, very fun. But what information is this revealing to us, really?
Yeah, so I think one has to understand that of all the parts of the human body, there's nothing even close in its complexity to the human brain. And we've known for hundreds of years now that nerve cells underlie the way the brain works. Individual nerve cells are connected to each other in some kind of wiring diagram. But what that wiring diagram is requires some way of reconstructing the connections between every single nerve cell. And that's what this is all about, is trying to get that wiring diagram out of these images.
Okay, so you're doing this work right now on mouse brains.
Oh, yes.
But yet, obviously, to get slices of a brain, the mouse has to be dead.
Yes.
But the brain is a living, growing, plastic organ. So what can we tell from, a deceased mouse brain that opens the door to understanding of how the actual functioning living brain works?
Well, I think in many ways, you're quite right. A real drawback in taking a structure from an anesthetized and ultimately sacrificed animal is that we have a static one-moment view of a very dynamic process. It's clear, though, if you think about your own brain and what you know, there are things in your brain based on memories you have from childhood that have persisted for a very long time, that are embedded somehow in this wiring diagram. So one imagines that that slice of time that one slices the brain up in actually has a rendering of everything that mouse has ever learned. Everything that's in the mouse's memory is built into that connectional map, if you will. Mm. So it does tell us something about what the animal has experienced in the past, but not about how it's going to change in the future, because that's the end of the mouse when we do this.
So let me ask you about that, because it's, I mean, maybe a Luddite way of putting what you're doing. It's a incredibly complex, you know, I'm thinking of an electrical engineering map. You know, you see the capacitors, you see the resistors, you see how things are connected with each other. But you know what the capacitors and resistors do. We know what function those things have. But do you know the function of the connections that you're imaging? Do the images reveal that, or are those still things that we need a living brain to help us understand?
Well, the field of neuroscience is a very advanced field, and we know a great deal about the relation between the structure of a small part of the brain and its function. For example, the place where nerve cells touch each other are called synapses, and synapses are asymmetric. There's an input side and an output side, and any electron microscopic image shows you the direction of flow just by seeing which side has the synaptic vesicles and the neurotransmitter and which side has the receptors that respond. So one can learn something about the arrow of information flow through a little circuit just by looking. But the timing of flow through many cells would require seeing large parts of this map all at once. And that is what we're aiming to do, is try to get such a big field of view that finally one can begin to make models where it's possible to infer the way information flows from one part of the brain to another.
Would it be possible to actually truly measure the way that information flows by, say, building a connectome of a mouse brain before it does a certain task or learns something, and then a connectome of that mouse brain afterwards?
Yes. I mean, you can't do it in the same mouse because the mouse is gone. But if you have two mice and one mouse learns something and one mouse doesn't, I guess you could look for the difference between those wiring diagrams to learn how that information was instantiated, if you will, into the brain.
Mm. So what is it, we're talking about mice brains, but to translate this to our understanding of the human brain, what are you hoping to learn?
Well, I think there are two general questions. One is there's a lot of basic information about how circuits are arranged in any mammalian brain that are not known. The second, though, is the more fundamental question for human health, and that is there is a wide range of mental disorders, everything from learning disorders in childhood to a wide range of mental illnesses in adults and even certain neurodegenerative diseases, where the problem with the brain is not understood at the level of circuits. And so if one has tools to see the circuits, perhaps we would have ways ultimately of understanding what's wrong in brains that have a mental abnormality.
Well, that's Professor Jeff Lichtman. He's a professor of molecular biology and cellular biology at Harvard, and we've got wonderful images of his research on our website at wbur.org/Boston. Professor Lichtman, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Well, we've got to take another break, but when we come back...
He said, I need to make some money and get the lights turned on in my house. We said, aren't you that Marine that got injured?
10% of veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan are unemployed. We'll hear about a service that's trying to link Massachusetts soldiers with jobs stateside. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.